Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on 101 Business Principles when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and the electronic record keeping of nearly every routine business activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right. But it is also responsible for a very discernible erosion in our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, the federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American. That's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. And closer to home, our state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems containing 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources. This information is gathered and then stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? What do they want it for? Well, knowing how this information is gathered and what information is stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, if you'd like more information about privacy and privacy issues, then call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. While you're at it, make sure you ask for our free general law CD package. And let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and just as private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website and you can send us an email. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send us that email request. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business principles. I've collected over my lifetime 101 of these business principles. I add one every once in a while. You know, there was a time when I had 50 business principles, and then, you know, each time I talk to some new businessman, and I'm sure that there's a lot of you out there that have some principles in business that you've discovered over the years. If you've got one or two or five that you haven't heard me talk about here, send them on to me, would you? I'm always interested in learning some new piece of wisdom, some new piece of understanding that I didn't know before. And I always make it a point every day to try to learn something that I didn't know. And as old as I am, you know, getting kind of old as the hills, I learn something new every day. Every day goes by, I figure out something new. I read something new, new piece of information. Sometimes I sit here and I say, gee, how come I didn't learn that when I was 30 years old? How come nobody told me that 40 years ago? Why didn't I know that when I was a teenager? Here I am, an old man already, and I didn't know that. But over the years, I have sat down with my Uncle Buster and my Uncle Lyle, my Aunt Bessie, my Granny, Granddad, and they passed on the wisdom of their time, their ages to me. And they said, well, you don't want to do this, but you want to do that. Sometimes I listened, sometimes I didn't. Sometimes I wished I had. But over the years, I gleaned out and I saved these business principles. I put them into practice. I do this every day, day in, day out. It's just part and parcel of the way I do business with people. If they're offensive to you and you don't want to do business with me. You know, like I said, sometimes you get kind of offensive. There's nothing wrong with making a good profit. I don't even tell people what my profit margin is on any particular business transaction because it might shock you and make you mad. The product or the service that I'm offering is either worth that amount of money or that amount of your time, effort, and energy, or it isn't. If it isn't, let it pass. Go buy it from somebody else. You know, there's other law schools out there. This isn't the only one. You don't have to come to this law school. If we charge too much money, you know, go to Yale or Harvard or somebody else. But I've found, remember, in one of my business principles, you get what you pay for. You know, you want a Harvard law school degree, and you're going to get what you pay for. If that's what you want, buy it. Now, if there's something else you want in life, then you're going to have to pay the price to get it. And so, these principles, you put them together, and then you add them all up, and then they produce a result, and the result is success. I'm not complaining. I'm happy as a clam. People call the law school and they're dissatisfied with government. They're dissatisfied with the income tax, the Federal Reserve, Homeland Security. They're dissatisfied with government at every level. They're dissatisfied with their jobs. They're dissatisfied with their incomes. They're dissatisfied with the bank. They're not satisfied with anything. I'm not complaining. I think that the Federal Reserve is a bad idea. I think paper money is a bad idea. I think our government was a bad idea. But, you know, I didn't make it. I didn't create it. And I'm not going to change much about it. So I have to live with it. I have to cope with it just like you and everybody else. So if you have some guidelines, some principles that you live by, that you employ in order to cope with it, you'll find that you'll make more money. I'm not going to change the Federal Reserve or the income tax, but I'm going to coexist with it, and I'm not paying the income tax. I'm not paying the Social Security tax. I'm not breaking any laws. I'm happy as a clam at high tide. I can't get a Social Security check. I can't get the benefits that come from the income tax and Social Security. I don't want the benefits, and I don't want to pay for them. And I don't want to buy them for you. Now they're talking, they want to give us health insurance. Health insurance. They want everybody, 44 million of us that don't have health insurance. I'm one of those. I don't have health insurance. They want to make sure I got health insurance. And they want you to pay for it. I don't want you to pay for my health insurance. I don't want any health insurance. I want you to tell Hillary next time you see her, don't give George Gordon any health insurance. He doesn't want it. Doesn't want to pay for it. Doesn't want to be a participant in it. No, leave me out. Now, the rest of you that all want it, you know, get after it. I don't want to prevent you people from being happy and successful. So the moral to the story is, you know, you have to cope with life, and principles and business will help you do just that. So number 48 to start off this session, success in business is determined by accomplishment, not by intent. Now, a lot of people intend to do a lot of neat things, but they really don't get much accomplished in the process. So I start my day off, and I start off by, what am I going to do today? I've got my business plan, and my plan for the day is organized. I know exactly what I'm going to do today. I have more on my plate than I'm going to get done today. I'll guarantee you that. But by having that much on there, it motivates me to hurry so that I can get the next item in, the next item in. At the end of the day, I'll be surprised at how much I really got done today. And all of that's going to add up to a happier, healthier, more successful business or success or profit today. Number 49, everything costs more than your original estimate. And that's especially true with fiat paper currency. I mean, the prices are changing every day. So whenever you're computing the costs of something, I always add one third. I sharpen my pencil on both ends, and I work down the list, and I call the suppliers, and I get the numbers, and I write them all down, and then I add them all up, and I come up with a number, and then I add one third to it. I usually add a little bit more than I needed, but then, you know, if you complain about it and say, well, you know, I got another guy over here who's got a better figure than you. Good. Go hire him, would you? Let him lose money. Don't make me lose money. I've done enough of that in my lifetime. I never lost any money on any deal I didn't make. I lost a lot of money on some deals that I wish I hadn't made. Remember that? Number 49, everything costs more than your original estimate. Don't forget that. Number 50, the most competitive business has the lowest prices, the best products, and the best service. And you can provide the lowest prices, best products, and the best service in your business enterprise. I mean, after all, your competitors over here, they all have the same costs that you do, maybe even higher costs. And if you're one of those with higher costs, you need to learn how to lower those. And we're coming to that. I'll show you that when you've got a savings that you can make on your overhead, it goes right straight to your bottom line. And business gets to be fun as you streamline it, as you think up new ideas to satisfy or serve your customers, and how you can do it faster and easier and better for them makes more profit for you. Number 51, here it is. Every dollar cut from overhead is a dollar of profit that goes straight to your bottom line. Straight to the bottom line. So let's suppose that you're over here and you're making widgets. And you're making widgets out of 2x10s. And you discover that these widgets are made out of 2x10s that are 16 feet long. And these 16-foot long 2x10s have to be cut into 23-inch widgets. And you're getting approximately 8 of these widgets out of each 2x10. Has it ever occurred to you that maybe you could buy mill run shorts? We discovered that one time that we could buy a lower grade, and by spending the time, that is the labor, on the lower grade to cut out the certain shorter pieces, that we actually made more money doing that. Well, every time you come up with one of those innovative ideas that shaves costs in the manufactured product or in whatever it is you're doing, well, then that goes right straight to your bottom line. And the reason for that is in order for you to make a dollar, you have to sell two. But when you save a dollar, you don't have to sell two. That dollar goes right straight to the bottom line. It's a dollar of profit. Think about it. Number 52, a business financed with borrowed money is most likely to fail. Now, I know that you've been told all your life that you have to borrow money in order to be a success in business. No. Debt is the mortal enemy of business. And 90% of all businesses fail in their first year. Well, you can just about bet that 100% of those businesses or close to it are all financed. Have you ever thought about what causes all of this business failure? The business failure is caused by debt. Now, you're better off to start your business small, all cash, 1-2-4-8-16-32-64. I knew a guy one time, his name was John Grambush, and he said to me, he said, I've got this real neat idea. I've got this carburetor. It gets 235 miles to the gallon. I thought 235 miles was quite an exaggeration, but I was getting about 6 miles to the gallon on my truck. And I said to John, I said, how much do you want for that carburetor? And he was developing this in his shop, and he said, well, I want... I think I kind of forgot now, it's been a long time ago, but I think he wanted something like $500 for it. And I said, John, I think $500 for that carburetor is a great buy. I said, I've got 7 trucks, and I will buy one right now. Have you got one? And he said, no. No, I haven't got them. You know, we haven't got the factory built. We haven't got the production lines going. We just have our two prototypes here. I said, okay, sell me one of the two prototypes that you have, and I'll pay you right now, cash, up front, right now, and I'll buy one for $500, and I'll put it on my truck. See, if it just doubles my 6 miles to 12 miles, I don't need 235 miles to count. I just need you to double my gas mileage. That'll cut my gas bill in half. If you cut my gas bill in half, two trips out, we'll pay for the carburetor. And then I'm going to buy one for every car of your vehicle. It's a great idea. I just love your idea. And then John said, well, no, he couldn't do that. I said, okay, well, he wanted me to buy it. He wanted me to pay money up front. And I used my business principle, never pay for something you can't take delivery on. So I said, well, just as soon as you get one, you let me know, and I'll pay you cash. I'll pay you in gold. I'll pay you silver, whatever you want. Hell, $1,000 would have been cheap. So, anyway, the moral of the story is the carburetor was never produced, never manufactured, never went anywhere, because John had to start a factory up to compete with General Motors. It never occurred to him that he could start a factory up and just turn them out one at a time, one a week. And then pretty soon he could take the profits that came off of turning out one a week and turn out two a week. And pretty soon he could take the profits from two a week and turn out four a week and then eight a week and then 16, 32, 64. And that in about 32 weeks he'd be turning out 40 million a week. He didn't think about geometric progression, I guess. Anyway, the Grand Busch carburetor is a total failure. It's never been marketed and you don't know anything about it, never heard of it. All right, another business failure that never got off the ground. So a business financed with borrowed money is most likely to fail. And number 53, we practice the 2% principle here. I like this one. That is, you buy it for a dollar and you sell it for two. And my wife was talking to a Jewish fellow one time on the telephone, this Jewish. You know, Jews are all good businessmen. They're second to the Chinese. Now, if you're a Jew and you're offended, let me tell you, you ain't done business with a Chinaman yet. Chinese are number one, by about 2 to 1. Second in business are the Jews. There's just no doubt about that. I never met a Jew that couldn't count and never met a Christian that could. So I just thought I'd pass that one on to you. So anyway, this Jew's talking to my wife, and they got talking about business, and he asked her, says, now, what's your profit margin? She said 2%. And he said, oh, my God, how can you make it on 2%? And she said, well, we buy it for a dollar, and we sell it for two. So we make it on the 2% principle. And he was just really excited, really shocked. And he said, oh, but that's 100% markup. See, that's a 50% profit. That's not 2%. That's 50. My wife said, well, now there you go again, getting all tangled up there. And all those big numbers, she says, we just keep it real simple. You know, we're just hillbillies and we just keep things real simple. And we use the 2% principle. You buy it for a dollar, you sell it for two, you make it on that 2%. That's what we've been doing. Works good for us. All right, you tuck that one away in your heart, boys and girls, and it'll work real good for you, too. And that's why I always tell people, I say, you know, you people with letters after your names, you know, you invest in stocks and bonds so that you can make 5%. I've told you this story. I'm going to tell you one more time. If you took the stock market back in 1960 and you bought $10,000 worth of blue chip Dow Jones and kept them till the year 2000, 40 years, you made 5% every year, compounded. You left it in there. You netted $72,000 when you got all through. But the inflation rate was 4.7% and the capital gain tax was 28%. And when you combine the three, you ended up with a loss of $3,800. So out of your $10,000, you've got $6,200 worth of purchasing power left. Boys and girls, you don't need to go to college to learn that kind of crap. I don't know of a businessman anywhere that would get out of bed for 5%. Never met one. Now, why you people want to invest your money in stocks and bonds and 401ks and all the rest of that crap out there? You know, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But there's no money in it. Now, the money's in private business. If you want to learn private business, I'd like to teach you how to do that. It comes right out of the Bible. I know it's bad news, and nobody wants to learn anything from the Bible, but I'm just telling you that the guy that invented the world and the universe also invented mathematics and the geometric progression principle. Okay, it's 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. All right, number 54, you build your barn first, and then you build your house from the profit from your barn. Americans have this exactly backwards. They graduate from college. I remember I had a doctor as a student. He graduated from college, and the bank gave him a $100,000 line of credit. In 5 years, he was bankrupt. Kid comes out of college with a $100,000 line of credit. He doesn't have a practice. He doesn't have an office. He doesn't have a single patient, but he's got $100,000 in credit. You know, that's like giving a kid 5 years old a case of dynamite and a box of matches. You know, this kid is just bound and determined to experiment with the dynamite until he blows himself up. And that's what happened to this doctor. And it happens to all these Hollywood starlets and all these Hollywood people, you know. Not every one of them, but most of them, you know. That you start giving them millions of dollars. Hell, these people can't handle millions of dollars at age 20, 25, and 30. You know, I got a 19-year-old daughter up here. If I gave that girl $1 million and said, go out and have fun, she'd be a drug addict, she'd be into meth. Why, she'd be a whore in 90 days if it took that long. No, money corrupts. You got to learn how to handle money. Money is like handling dynamite, you know. It needs some skill, needs some ability. People that have too much money too fast always misuse it and misapply it. So you need to learn how to build your barn first. You need to learn how to make money. And then it's like learning how to fish. Once you learn how to fish, son, you're going to be fed for the rest of your life. Once you learn how to make money, you'll be fed for the rest of your life. If you fall into a big inheritance, you win the lottery. These people, you know, that win the lottery, hell, they're broke in 5 years. I don't know how now people can spend 20, 30, 40 million bucks, but you take a look at the statistics. There's a kid out here, some black guy out here in California, remember Rodney King? He got $3.5 million. He was flat-ass broke in 3 years. $3 million. Boys and girls, I don't know how in the hell you'd spend $3 million. I haven't been trained in how to spend it. I've been trained on how to make it, how to save it, how to garner it, how to take care of it. I don't know how to squander money like that. I'm not sure I want to learn. Number 55, overhead is a luxury that profit cannot afford. Overhead. You know, overhead, that's where you have hot and cold running secretaries running in and out. When you're making lots of money and got lots of cash flow, it's the temptation of every businessman, you know. Every farmer's got a new Dodge Dually. Whether he's making money or not, he's got a new pickup. I look at all my neighbors around here. I feel like a pauper. Honest to God, all of my neighbors are driving around in new pickups. Everybody except old Gordon over here. He's got this old. I got a 19. I didn't even know what year it was until the ignition switch broke the other day. Called the mechanic and I said, "Hey, my boy," I said, "the ignition switch broke on my pickup." And then he said, "What year is it?" And I said, "I don't know." He said, "I don't think I can order a switch for that pickup unless I know what year it is." So I said, "Okay." So I went in the wife. I said, "Do you know our pickup?" And she said, "Yeah." I said, "Do you know what year that pickup is?" She said, "No." I said, "Could you look it up?" And she said, "Yeah." So some time went by, and one day I came through the kitchen, and she said, "Well, I found out what year that pickup was." And I said, "What year?" She said, "It's 1986. "Hey, I don't have a new Dually, but I got an old Dually. I got an 86. Does that count?" Hell, my neighbors, you know, they kind of look down their nose at me. That Gordon over there, he's really poor. God. "Well, yeah, I guess I am. I don't have a new Dodge Dually, but I don't have any payments to make either." And when the switch went out on it, I can afford 40 or 50 bucks to have a new one put in. So overhead is a luxury that profit can't afford. And so always tuck that one away in your heart. Number 56, you know, all contracts are oral. the document is the highest and best evidence of the oral agreement. So, you know, when you're out here making a deal with somebody, what comes out of your mouth is oral, and I showed you a little earlier, you don't want to speak until you get all the facts. I can be sitting here, you know, talking to a guy, and this guy's thinking out loud. And what he's thinking's coming out his mouth. And he's just sitting here telling me all of his thoughts about this business transaction. And he's telling me about all of his ideas. But I ain't saying nothing. And so when this is all over, I don't need any intelligence. This guy's already told me everything that's been going on through his brain. So I know everything that he knows, plus I know everything that I know. So I'm twice as smart as he is. Because I didn't tell him what I know, and I didn't tell him what I'm thinking. So tuck that one away in your heart. You know, you think quietly. And then it's good if you say, well, thank you. I like to sit down and I say, well, now, what is it that you want out of this? And I write down all the things that this guy wants. How much did you want to pay for this? And I write down, you know, how much it is he wants to pay for this. I get all the information from this guy I can. I don't tell him jack's diddly squat. Then I go off and I tell him I'll come back with an answer about next Thursday. And I sit down with my wise counsel. I always call my wife in. I say, now, sit down here, wise counsel. Tell me where I'm going wrong here. And so we get to thinking and talking, and we sharpen our pencils on both ends, and we get to figuring. Pretty soon we get to a number down here. Yep, that's a good deal, or nope, that's a bad deal, or well, you weren't thinking about this, that, or something else. So you better not forget this, that, and something else. And then when we come back on Thursday, we hammer out a deal. We hammer out a deal that's good for me. I hope it's good for you, but you know, you better be thinking about making your deal that's good for you, because I'm thinking about making the deal that's good for me. And then sometimes some years go by and some guy comes back and says, you know, that deal wasn't as good as I thought it was. And I say, you know, I didn't think that deal was as good as you thought it was either. But it was real good the way I thought it was. And I'm not complaining. So remember that all contracts are oral. Think quietly. And then when you write up the document becomes the highest and best evidence of the oral agreement. The oral agreement is the contract. The document is the highest and best evidence of it. Number 57, a man will only trade that which he esteems least. I never have traded my wife. I esteem her pretty high. Now, just about everything else I've got is for sale. And maybe at the right price, she might be for sale too. But I ain't had any offers yet that would come close to her value. So I esteem her pretty highly. Especially her 2% principle. I always did like her 2% business model. And it's worked out so good that, shucks, I let her go to the store all by herself to go grocery shopping. And she's done real good over the years. She went to school. She reads and writes. She can count real good, too. She can count so good she doesn't even need to take her shoes off. Yes, sir. And so you want to tuck that one away in your heart, that when somebody is offering you something for sale, there's something wrong with it, or it's something that he esteems very lightly, or he wouldn't be selling it. Now, I got some things here that aren't for sale. And that's because I esteem them very highly. So when I'm selling you something, it's something that I've got a lot of, and I don't value very highly because I've got a lot of them. And always remember, we learned this coming right out of the chute, that when you start on a business deal, all business transactions are conducted between unequals. Because if at any time we're equal, we can't do business. So that which a man esteems least is the thing that he speaks most highly of. And boy, does he talk highly of the things that he esteems the least. Because he would like you to own those things that he esteems the least. And he wants you to pay for them in the bargain. Hey, I got to give you a mid-course reminder, and that is that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed to the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school and asking for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about business principles. Business principles. I've collected 101. There's probably 200 or 500, maybe more. I don't know. I learned these business principles from the Bible, or I learned them from Henry Kaiser or Henry Ford. I learned them from Frank Rocha, or I learned them from Russell Harvey. I learned them from other businessmen, successful people, you know, people that were never a Bill Gates or a Donald Trump. But people who had made $1 million in life, and people who had businesses that supported them all of their lives, businessmen that drove, you know, very seldom did they drive a new car. The only guy that I can remember that ever bought a new car was Frank Rocha. 1958, Frank Rocha bought a brand new 1958 Chevrolet Biscayne automobile. Remember them ugly ducks? God, that car was ugly. Well, anyway, pretty ugly. The 58 model, paid cash. He bought a six-cylinder, cheap one. I don't know if it had a radio or a heater. And I don't know if it had white sidewall tires. Knowing Frank, it probably didn't. But you can rest assured that when he bought it, he paid cash. I always buy used cars because they're cheap. I like to watch you buy a new car and then lose that first year's depreciation. When I come back in, you know, after about 3 or 4 years and buy it for a song when it's got about 40,000 miles on it, still has about 100,000 left in it, and I can buy it real cheap. Now, that's what I like to do because I'm a cheapskate. But then most businessmen are about like I am, except one. I had a Jew come in here the other day and had a mortgage on his house. I've been in the business world for a lot of years. Now, I could understand a Christian having a mortgage on his house because Christians can't count. Christians can't do math. White men can't play basketball. Christians can't count, and I never met a Jew that couldn't. This Jew had a mortgage on his house. I was so shocked, I said, "What? You have a mortgage?" And he was quick to his defense. He said, "Well, yes, I've got a mortgage, but I'm doing it for business reasons." "Oh," I said. And then I said, "What business reasons?" Because, see, if you take a mortgage on a house, the break-even point's in 5 years at 6%. Now, I could understand a guy buying a piece of property and taking out a mortgage and then he's going to sell it, you know, in a short period of time, 6 months or a year. We call that commercial paper. It's like flooring. You know, you got furniture, you've got a truckload of merchandise you want to buy, and you don't want to put out your cash. So you go to Westinghouse Finance, and you take out a flooring contract. You know, you're going to Westinghouse, they buy this truckload or carload of furniture for you. And then you pay them 5% interest. Now, it's great business for the flooring company because they're getting paid 5% for a loan that's going to last 90 days. Now, big companies like R.C. Willey, you know, they come down with 90-day dating. They make you finance them so they don't have to pay that interest. But commercial paper and flooring is pretty common. That's a business transaction. I can see paying interest on a business transaction. I don't pay interest because it violates the scripture. But, you know, as a business deal, I mean, you know, so there's at least some logic behind it. But when you got a mortgage on a house, that's a shocker. So I got to report to you, I met a Jew with a mortgage on his house. I got to tell you. Nice guy, very bright, makes a lot of money. I'm sure that even if that's a bad business deal, he'll learn from it and he'll recover from it because he can count. All right, number 59, the profit's made when you buy, not when you sell. You collect the profit when you sell. See, most people don't understand this principle. And they go out and they buy stuff. And most of the time, they're not buying stuff, you know, with any idea of selling it. Now, when I buy a car, I'm not buying it with the idea of selling it. I mean, I'm not out here buying this car because I want to turn around, sell it, make a profit, because I'm not a car salesman. I'm not a car dealer. I don't know how to do that. I'm not into that. I go to the auto auction and buy a car because I want to pay the least amount of money for it because I need transportation, and every dollar I save goes straight to my bottom line. You know, if I've got $5,000 and I've got that earmarked for transportation, and I spend $2,500 and I buy a car and I save $2,500, that gives me $2,500 to go buy a big screen TV. Now, That increases my standard of living because now I have a car and I have a big screen TV. Now, if I could buy the big screen TV for $500 down here at the pawn shop, I'd save $2,000, which would give me $2,000 to go out and maybe buy a motorcycle. Now I've got the car, satisfied my transportation needs, now I've got a big screen TV, and now I've got a motorcycle, and maybe I bought the motorcycle for $1,000 and I still have $1,000 left over. Then I can go down to, and my wife likes to do this, we can go down to the mall and we can go into an antique store and my wife can squander $1,000 on these worthless antiques. But it was because I saved $1,000 out of the $5,000 that we had originally earmarked for transportation. Now Christians, they take the $5,000 that they've got earmarked for transportation and they put it as a down payment on a bigger, better car. You know, maybe a Lexus. And then they start making $1,000 a month payments on this Lexus over the next 60 months. So that when they get through paying for this car, they can pay, you know, something like $120,000 for this Lexus that they could have bought 3 years old for $25,000 cash. But that's why I said Christians can't count. I've said that before. I'm going to say it again. Now, there's probably a couple of exceptions, but maybe there's one or two exceptions out there to that rule. But I'm just telling you as a general rule. I run across an exception. I told you about the Jew that's got a mortgage on his house. I can't remember any Christians that could count yet, but if you know of one, send me an email and let me know so that I could add it to my list. The profit's made when you buy it, boys and girls. Well, not when you sell it. And if you're figuring on making your profit when you sell it, that's when you're buying high and expecting to sell higher. The real goal here is to buy low and sell high, not to buy high and sell higher. Or to buy low and sell lower. That's not the name of the game. All right, number 60. A business is like a crap table. Your business is like a crap table. It is not the place to store your wealth. And there's an important reason for that. And that's because all businesses go out of business. Think about it for a minute. Now, I've had probably 10 businesses in my lifetime. I used to be in the dairy business. You know, I'm not in the dairy business anymore. I still have some milk cows, but, you know, I'm not producing for Humboldt Creamery. Now, that business went out of business. Sometimes you go out of business because you failed in business. Then you had a forced sale, and that was the end of that. Sometimes you go out of business because it's no longer profitable. I went out of the furniture business because the profitability that was in it in the 70s disappeared in the 80s. So, no sense staying in an unprofitable business. You know, this business was great when it was profitable, but now it's not profitable. It's kind of like buggy whips. There was a time when buggy whips were a very profitable item. There are still buggy whips today, but they're not nearly as lucrative as they were, say, in 1900 or 1890. So there's some businesses, you know, that we just soon, you know, let somebody else take them. Like the Amish make buggy whips, and they make good ones. But I decided that the buggy whip business probably wasn't for me. So these businesses don't stay forever. Business is not forever. Number 61, business, unlike diamonds, are not forever. All businesses cease to exist, either by bankruptcy, by merger, or by a going out of business sale. Which takes us back to number 60. A business is like a crap table. It's not the place to store your wealth. And if you're storing your wealth in your business, which is ultimately going to go out of business, you're going to lose your wealth with the business. All right, so the way you handle that is you always pull your profits. So your business is making money. Okay, so you pull your profits. And you take those profits and you convert them to gold and you go bury it in a hole in the ground. Then we come back to our business and we keep working it some more. As long as your business is profitable, you stay in that business and you keep milking it. You know, as long as the cow's milking, you keep milking her. When she dries up, you put her out to pasture. See how simple that is? All right, so tuck that one away in your heart. Number 60 and 61 go together. A business is like a crap table. It's not the place to store your wealth. So pull your wealth out of your business. And you store your wealth in a hole in the ground someplace. And that's because, number 61, businesses, unlike diamonds, aren't forever. And that's because all businesses cease to exist. You know, Chrysler is in the process of ceasing to exist. And General Motors and Ford, you know, you said, oh, no, they're too big to fail. I know, so was Enron, Global Crossing, Studebaker, Hudson, Packard. I know it. They were all too big to fail, but they're gone. So was Montgomery Ward, Cressis. There are stores, you know, that have been here, and now they're gone. They're historical footnotes. And Bill Gates and Microsoft will cease to exist. General Motors will cease to exist. Something else will take its place. It may be Toyota. It may be Cisco Systems. It may be Walmart. It may be, I don't know. But business is not forever. You know, they tell us diamonds are forever. Well, businesses aren't. Number 62. A fool gives his capital to another to lose. Think about that. A fool gives his capital to somebody else to lose. That's the doctor and the airline pilot. I told you this the other day. Airline pilots and doctors are the two people that have the most venture capital. The two groups of people that have the most venture capital are airline pilots and doctors. They will put up venture capital for anything. And especially things like gold mines in the bottom of the Pacific Trench, under 35,000 feet of water. They will invest money in those kind of gold mines. Why? Because a fool and his money are soon parted. Have you ever heard that old adage, you know, a fool and his money are soon parted? Airline pilots make tons of money. They make more money than they know how to handle. The basic problem with airline pilots starts with their education. Airline pilots are very skilled people that make a lot of money, but they've never been trained in business. Here's where they get their training. They go to high school. They get out of high school, and then they may go to college and then join the Air Force or the Navy, or they may join the Air Force or the Navy and then come out and go to college. They get a public education, but they get a public education in flying airplanes, not in counting. They can't count. They can't do geometric progression. They can't do percentages. I told you about the doctor that graduated from college with a $100,000 line of credit. It was more than he could handle. He couldn't handle it. All right, now, I knew a guy by the name of Larry. And Larry was a bright young man. I liked him. And he had a library over in Duncan, Oklahoma. And he was born in the old age of his father. His father was 70 years old when Larry was born. And his father was a very successful banker. And he had made some $250 million. He made it during the Great Depression when all the farmers were going upside down. He took those farms back, and after World War II, they discovered oil in all those farms that the bank owned. And since the bank was owned by old man Humphreys, why, he ended up with a lot of oil money. But he's got a young wife, and he's got a lot of money. But his boy, he had a couple daughters, but his boy, his heir, his namesake, is born when he's 70. So the old man knows he's not going to live to raise this boy. This boy is not going to be raised by his father. He's going to be dead. So the old man comes up with a plan. And so he left a lot of money to his wife, and he left a lot of money to his daughters. But he left the bulk of his inheritance, $220 million, to his boy. And he put them all in trust. He set up these trusts to protect all of his loved ones. And so in the trust for the $220 million, he started off when the boy got to be 21 years old. He gave him $1 million. And so here's this kid. He's 21 years old. He gets $1 million. All right. And when the kid's 22, he gets $1 million. This goes on till he's 30. So age 21, 22, 23, 25, 29, 30, he gets $1 million a year. The kid goes out and spends $1 million a year for 10 years. Now, when he is 30 years old, he gets $5 million. See this, $5 million. But he doesn't get anything when he's 31, 32, 33, 34, and 35. And when he gets the $5 million, that's the last money he's going to get until he's 35 years old. When he's 35, he's going to get the whole $220 million. Provided that he marries and produces one male heir to the Humphrey estate. When I met Larry, he was 31, unmarried. He married when he was 32. He produced one female offspring, was divorced by age 35, had no male offspring, and the $220 million went to charity. Larry was not the sharpest marble in the drawer, and with good reason. He had money. He had wealth. He had good breeding. He came from a good family. But nobody ever taught him how to manage money. And his daddy, who knew how to manage money, died before Larry could learn from his daddy. And that's what happens to airline pilots and doctors. These people go out and make so much money so fast before they've learned how to make it that they don't know how to hang on to it. So somebody else comes along and says, I've got this real neat idea for you to invest your money in. Boys and girls, when you have money, there will be no end of people who have good ideas as to where you should invest your money. And you will give your money to these fools. And these fools will go out and invest your money and they'll lose it. And that's because a fool gives his capital to another to lose. Now, I always discovered that I was dissatisfied with the way other people handled my money. Fortunately, I didn't have $220 million at stake, because if I had, I probably would have lost it all, just like this Larry boy did. And the reason is because I didn't know how to manage it. Now, when I was a young boy, age 15, I had some good guidance. I had men that told me, old men that said, never put your money in the bank. That's coming up. Never put your money in the bank. They told me that. So where did I put my money? In the bank. And then I bought insurance. And I don't know, somebody told me that insurance was a good investment, so I invested in life insurance, Northwestern Mutual Life Insurance. I wasn't happy with my money in the bank, and I wasn't happy with the way the Bank of America took care of it. I wasn't happy with the insurance policy, and I wasn't happy with the way Northwestern Mutual handled my money. So some years went by, and one day I got to be 37 and I learned how to count. See, I was institutionalized when I was a young child, 6 years old. I was placed in an institution for 12 years. It was called public school. And I didn't learn how to count. And I didn't graduate from public school, but I went on to get a graduation certificate called a GED. I never learned how to count until I was 37. And then I learned how to count. And once I learned how to count, boys and girls, I've never been the same since. Because then I learned how to make money. Then I learned how to manage it. Once I learned how to make it and manage it, now I can hang on to it. I don't have very much, but what little bit I've got, I've got it all. And you'll play hell getting it away from me. And I got my 101 business principles. And if I follow these 101 business principles, it's not very likely that you're going to get very much of it away. I mean, you might get some of it. I've made some bad deals in my life, and I'll probably make a couple more before I die. But I don't think you can get it all. But I've seen a lot of guys, and they can go out and they can squander everything that they've got. And the story about Larry over here is just one of those classic cases. A fool gives his capital to another to lose. Now, number 63, all business by its very nature is a selfish enterprise. Business is a selfish enterprise. It's not magnanimous and altruistic. I'm not out here in business to employ people to make life happy and successful for my employees. I mean, you could do that if you want, but you won't be in business long. You won't last long. Now, I have people that do business with me, and they make a lot of money off of me. My business associates make a lot of money off of me, and God bless them all, I'm happy for them. And I hope they make twice as much next year. And that's because that's an incentive for all of my business associates to do business with me, because we make business together. We make money together. We make profits together. But I'm not concerned about my business associates. I'm not out here telling my business associates, oh, Bob, oh, Frank, oh, Tom, let me share with you my 101 business principles. I don't give a rat's rectum about Bill, Tom, or Frank. They need their own business principles, and they need their own profits. They need their own business acumen. They don't need anything from me. And you can rest assured that if old Frank can't supply me with paper and Kinko's can't supply me with printing, there's somebody else out there that can and will. And that's who I'll buy from. I hope Frank and Tom make it. But you know, it's not my duty in life to prove to them that I'm smarter than they are. Told you about Irwin Schiff, and I know Irwin, you know, he's getting some static from the government, and I called him one day. I said, hey, Irwin, why don't you come down here to school? I'll put you through school free. I don't do that for the rest of you people. You got to pay. And if you're a Mormon, you got to pay cash in advance. I said, Irwin, I'll educate you. I'll tell you what I know free. And he said, George, I haven't got the time. I said, okay. He went to jail. So went on three times. One day my wife called me and said, hey, Irwin's being prosecuted again. Do you want me to call him? And I said, no. No, you don't need to call him. I already know he's up to his you-know-what and alligators, and he hadn't got time to come down here. I don't have any duty to protect a fool from his folly, and neither do you. So tuck it away in your heart. Business is a selfish adventure. It's a selfish enterprise. And I'm only concerned about me and my business. But I'll tell you this. You don't need to support me. I'm not practicing from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. And if I can't provide my own health insurance, you keep your money in your pocket, partner. You buy your own health insurance. You take care of yourself. And let George Gordon take care of himself. And I think you're going to find out that he who practices from each according to his ability and to each according to his need will stand in line and share the shortage. And I don't want to stand in line with you and share your shortage. So I'm going to take care of me, and you take care of you, and you make sure that you don't take care of me. You take care of you. You just practice your business just as selfish as I practice mine. And if you can take care of you, you can rest assured that I can take care of me. And you know what's going to happen? Both of us are going to be taken care of. But if you're waiting for me to take care of you, and I'm waiting for you to take care of me, we're both going to starve to death. You know that? So all business by its very nature then is a selfish enterprise. Let's see if we can do one more. Number 64, good business, like a good story, comes from the heart. It doesn't come from company policy. So, a good businessman has to be versatile. He has to be able to bend with a wind, like a tree in a storm. I know sometimes I say, well, here's what we're going to do, and then halfway through the project, I got to change course. And the people around me, they kind of shake their heads and say, you know, Gordon can't make up his mind. Well, I had my mind made up when we started on the venture, but events transpired. Something different came up. And now I've got to make a change, and government officials can't do that. Once they've adopted a policy, they can't change. Take a look at the war in Iraq. Things are different today than they were at the beginning. And you know, the president's been unable to change. He's got to stay the course. Okay, that's what Hitler did. He stayed the course, and there was an ultimate outcome that came from it. In business, boys and girls, things change. And when they change, you've got to change with them. So good business is like a good story. It comes from the heart. It doesn't come from company policy. The company has a policy, but that doesn't mean that the policy can't change. And the policy has to change from time to time. So when it's time to change the policy, you change it because it needs to be changed. All right, that's 64 out of the way. We'll be back tomorrow with some more. We got to stop right here and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information, then please go to our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one for yourself. Be selfish. Order one for you. The number to call is 417-273-4967. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.